I'm Desiree DiOrio, and I cover news about the military and veterans for WSHU Public Radio. Staying well informed is essential to a well-functioning democracy. Understanding facts and filtering out noise takes work, and our mission at WSHU is to help you do that through coverage from our newsroom, NPR News, and the BBC. We're expanding our world together. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Rescue workers from our region will assist with Hurricane Helene recovery efforts. Pandemic-era federal funding for schools expires today. East Coast dock workers say they'll strike if they can't reach a new contract with their employers. Plus, the latest from WSHU's Long Story Short. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut will send a search and rescue team to North Carolina to help with recovery efforts after Hurricane Helene. WSHU's Sarah Anastasi reports.
The 8-person team includes state and local volunteers and police. They left Connecticut Friday and are expected to stay in North Carolina for a week. Jonathan Hartenbaum is with the state's Emergency Management and Homeland Security Division. He helped organize the urban search and rescue team. He says the team will search riverbanks and piles of debris.
Vehicles that were washed away, they're checking those vehicles to make sure that there's nobody inside of them. There are people who are in their homes that were cut off from other parts of the towns. So they're evacuating them at their request and taking them to a shelter.
Hartenbaum says the team is specially trained in swift water rescue, wildland search, and more. Connecticut also deployed a National Guard unit that departed for North Carolina on Friday morning. Sarah Anastasi, WSHU News.
And Governor Kathy Hochul will also send 30 New York State emergency workers to North Carolina to help out. The state is also sending equipment like helicopters, generators, and canines. Pandemic-era federal funding for schools expired today. Parents and teachers in New Haven say they face major funding gaps without more money from the government. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
New Haven Public Schools got more than $125 million from the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Act. The money was for mental health support, tutoring, school upgrades, and more. Without that money, New Haven Federation of Teachers President Leslie Blateau says the district will struggle.
Here's the reality. We have ongoing vacancies that impact our students' access to a world-class education. We have real facilities concerns that impact our health and safety.
Mayor Justin Ellicker says the district needs an additional $35 million per year to staff the schools. He called on the federal government to fully fund Title I in the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act to supplement some of the lost funding. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
Dock workers up and down the East Coast are meeting with their employers to negotiate a new labor contract. If they fail to reach an agreement, the dock workers say they are likely to strike. Governor Hochul of New York said that strike will cause significant supply chain disruption.
We're closely monitoring this situation and ready to deploy state resources if and when necessary. Again, Department of Homeland Security coordinating with all of our state agencies to prepare for any shortages of essential goods and materials. Our state stockpiles, including emergency generators, are ready to be mobilized at a moment's notice.
About 47,000 workers are expected to strike. 4,500 of them work in the tri-state area. Dock workers are responsible for moving shipping containers from the boats onto the ports. Without them, ports cannot operate. Hochul says a strike won't impact the food supply, and the state is ready to deploy additional aid if pharmaceuticals are affected. A Connecticut teen says Hartford schools denied her an education, and teachers say she's not alone. The latest from WSHU's Long Story Short is ahead.
Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthcare.org.
Fatal overdoses have dropped dramatically on Long Island between 2022 and 2023. In Suffolk, overdoses were down over 11%, and Nassau County saw a 16% drop. Public health officials say the increased availability of Narcan is a leading cause of the decline. A new poll from Sacred Heart University found most young people in the U.S. are anxious about the effects of climate change. While more than three-quarters of young people say they feel personally responsible for addressing climate change, nearly 60% believe individual actions will have limited or no effect, according to the poll. Sacred Heart University is the licensee of WSHU. The Paramount Theater in Huntington has been bought by Live Nation. The 500-seat theater and performing arts center has been locally owned since it opened in 2011. A sale price was not disclosed. Live Nation owns Flagstar at Westbury Music Fair and books shows for Northwell at Jones Beach. The Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection fined the state's lottery corporation $16,000 after a system glitch led to nearly $3,000 of unpaid winnings. The lottery didn't tell officials until nearly 2 weeks after discovering the flaw. State officials say that led to a higher fine. Teen-year-old Alicia Ortiz, a student at UConn, hasn't quite decided on her career path yet. She's considering becoming a teacher, administrator, or maybe a lawyer. But before that, she has to learn how to read and write. WSHU's Ebang Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's Jessica Harke, who's done in-depth reporting on this. It's part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
Hello, Jessica. You tell us about Alicia, a 19-year-old high school senior in Hartford, who told the Hartford City Council in May that she was never taught to read or write, despite spending all her time in Hartford public schools since she was 6 years old. Is that what prompted you to dig deeper into the story?
Yeah, so I was actually at the Hartford City Council meeting because of the budget issues they were having earlier this year. And so they had a rally that day with a bunch of friends, a bunch of family members, and they all came out to pretty much advocate that, hey, we need more funding in this school system. Alicia went up with one of her teachers and she was just using really strong language of, I was failed by this school district. You guys abandoned me. You let me down. And ended up breaking into tears. The whole auditorium was crying. And I said, there's a story there. For a teenager to be talking that strongly about a school system, something went wrong. So afterwards, I chased her and I was like, hey, like, I heard what you said. I think that there's a story here. Can we talk further? So it was the end of the school year around that time. And we ended up meeting up at her high school. We went down to a classroom and we were just talking. And she was like, yeah, I don't know how to read or write. And I said, at all? I was shocked. And that's where she was telling me the story.
This is a 19-year-old who had been in school in Hartford since she was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And she had come over from Puerto Rico with her mother when she was five, correct?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
So her entire education was Hartford Public Schools.
Exactly. And she was a student who was a multilingual student. She was in special education courses. And she claims that her whole academic career, especially through elementary school, she was just sat in the back of a regular classroom and told to do other tasks. While other kids were learning how to read and write, they were given books, they were doing basic math. She was asked just to draw pictures, to clean bookshelves, just to do things so she wouldn't disrupt the class, pretty much. And so she went that way through well into middle school. And at that point, she was saying that she started to act out. And that was mostly just from being unable to communicate. She didn't really speak the language. She didn't know how to read. She didn't know how to write. She wasn't performing in school. And began to have behavioral issues, is what she told me well into middle school. Wasn't spending much time in a classroom at this point because she was always in the principal's office. And so it was just a snowball effect of never receiving instruction when she was younger, and then how that just continued to develop into her academic career.
You touch on a very interesting aspect of her education here. the sense that she started using her phone to record lessons and would play the lessons back and try and memorize the lessons. Could you just explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so because she didn't know how to read or write, she wasn't able to take physical notes. And so she ended up just trying to figure out, especially during the pandemic, where you don't have a physical teacher in front of you, she would just start recording the lessons and say, I'll just listen to it back so I can have something to refer to. And that's what she said that she did all through her last year of middle school into her first few years of high school. And at that point, what she was using was Google Translate. So she would print out a piece of paper with the lesson or her homework. The picture on Google Translate, you take a picture and it highlights the text for you, and you can have it translated and read out loud to you. So she was speaking English at this point, but she was just using the translation service to be able to read that text out loud to her, to understand what was being said on that written piece of paper.
And she showed you her phone. She had up to 700 audio files on her phone.
Yep. And a lot of those have been deleted. But when you use that audio file, it tells you like how many recordings you've done that thus far. Right. So I think it was like 736 file, blah, 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 with that number at the end of it. And I was like, so you have all 700? She's like, oh, no, I would not have any storage on my phone if I kept all of those, because at that point she was recording our lessons six times a day.
Now, Jessica, you spoke with administrators and other school officials. What did they say?
Yeah, so the hard part about a story like this is no one really wants to have their name on the record just for retaliation purposes. So Alicia was able to connect me with some staff that she remembered. I said, give me a list of everyone that you remember in the school district that you ever interacted with. And one of the most interesting conversations I had was a paraeducator who had known her for several years, who had seen her when she was a child, was working in that same school, and ultimately was working in the high school when she went into the high school. And during that conversation, they were just telling me, like, Alicia is not the only kid like this. We see it a lot in special education where kids are just being passed through, but we also just see it in regular education where students just get passed through. You can probably find other kids who are graduating without the ability to read or write.
Now, this is more than 30 years since the landmark education desegregation case in Connecticut, the Sheff versus O'Neill case. And a lot of state money has been spent to upgrade the Hartford school system in particular. So what are administrators saying? Where did they drop the ball?
Yeah, I think the hard thing when we look at that Sheff case is the creation of magnet schools, and that a lot of money is being poured into these magnet schools, but may not be distributed equally among their traditional public schools. And so something, as I was looking at their budget earlier this year, and I was talking to the superintendent, I was talking to the district, just asking, like, where is all the money going? A lot of it is going to these magnet schools, having to pay these tuitions, and then not having those appropriate resources in your traditional public schools. Another concern that they've been just begging the state legislature about is just special education costs.
Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you.
Long Story Short comes from WSHU Public Radio and the Connecticut Mirror. I'm Ebong Udama.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, listen on the radio at WSHU.org or with the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare, and it takes a little support from all of us to keep local, independent journalism strong. If you appreciate the reporting here at WSHU, please consider making a donation to our station. In fact, today is New Member Monday, so if you're a first-time donor to WSHU, you can claim the WSHU Chico bag as your thank you gift today only. Featuring logos of some of your favorite NPR and WSHU programs. So visit our website, click on donate up at the top. You can see what the bag looks like there, and you can make your contribution there too. Or give us a call at 800-777-9748. And thank you for your support. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day. I'll speak to you tomorrow.